So most of us will have heard of Murphy's Law. Murphy's Law, of course, is anything that can go wrong will go wrong. And some people like to add, and in the worst possible way and at the worst possible time. So that's Murphy's Law. And I thought it'd be interesting to see what would happen if we brought together something like Murphy's Law with Conway's Law. So Toby, what's Conway's Law?
So Conway's Law is, it's making rounds again, but what Milton Conway said in 1968, he wrote a paper called How Committees Invent. And in that one, he claims the following. Organizations which design systems are constrained to produce designs which are copies of the communication structures of these organizations. So essentially what he's saying is that how people communicate within any group that creates a solution will shape the solution space and constrain it. Within software, we have common renditions of this, like the one from ESR. Like if you have four groups that are tasked with creating a compiler, you get a four-phase compiler. If you have a big team, you'll get a monolith. If you have many small teams, you'll get microservices. These are sort of the general ideas floating around. And just to sort of do anything, a lot of people say, well, that's a nice theory. Has it been tested? And it has been tested. So there's actually research on this. You can find from Harvard Business School. They actually had a paper called Exploring the Duality Between Product and Organizational Architecture. This, they call it the mirroring hypothesis, and it holds true. That sort of the way we're organized will be reflected in the software. So that's Conway's Law.
So, of course, with Conway's Law, nothing could ever go wrong, could it?
Or it goes hilariously wrong. But please enlighten me how it cannot go wrong.
Well, you know, if we design the perfect organization with the perfect communication structures, which is exactly the off-the-shelf maps to the off-the-shelf software that we want to buy, then that would work perfectly, wouldn't it? Because we should just like double-click on the .exe, install, ready to go.
Yeah, I think this is hilarious because the marriage of Conway and Murphy, I think that's essentially how it most often happens, or it just goes wrong. And it's not a Bob Ross sort of accident that sort of, oh, that's a happy little accident. Luckily, we got that. It's more a sort of unintended consequences. And when you said sort of, well, what happens if we mix these two? I actually started thinking about how I tried to frame this way back in 2014 when I was talking about the reverse Conway. Because what I was trying to talk about then is that architecture and organization structure, that they are sort of intertwined in this way, right? And what I wanted to highlight was that a lot of architecture happened by accident. And this is the sort of accident I think we're talking about, that when you get in an agile coach or some other person that can shape how people converse, they can move people around between teams, they can influence who talks to whom, then they'll be changing the architecture. And of course, unintended consequences will ensue. And this also goes in the other way. So it feels like most things are accidents in this particular instance, and probably also of the kind that it goes wrong in the most spectacular way possible. I've seen that architecture.
It's interesting you mentioned reverse Conway's Law, because of course I also like to think of reverse Murphy's Law. So how reverse Murphy's Law works is, if Murphy's Law is anything that can go wrong will go wrong, then I like to think if I prepare that it could go wrong and I've got a plan B, then it probably won't. So that's what I call reverse Murphy's Law.
It's a bit like, I think it's often attributed to Mark Twain, and as anything attributed to anyone on the internet, it's probably untrue, but it lends some credence to the idea that it's not the things that we do not know that kills us, it's the things we do know that aren't so. So this is sort of the idea that it's our misconceptions that tends to bring us offline. It feels like it actually sort of could play into that. And also this idea that it's almost like the reversal of luck favors the prepared mind, in a sense that sort of all the things you've looked at, those are the things that sort of the risks you manage by doing risk management. The effect is sort of, well, I know about all these things, so I don't need to worry about those. It's sort of, it's all the things that aren't on the map anymore. Those are probably the things that are just going to come from left field and drive me over like a bit of a Murphy's bus.
Yeah, and I remember this story about an organization that they had a particular way of setting up their products. And they had a whole bunch of systems and they wanted to consolidate it into a brand new set of systems. So going from a large number of systems down to just a few. And of course, the target systems were all the whiz-bang ones. But what actually happened was they just reinstated all of the things that they designed in those multiple systems, and they had to reinstate them and conglomerate it together because they were bringing different things together into these target systems. So all that really happened is they had an opportunity to change how things worked, but it really just ended up reflecting what they'd always done. So I think that was a beautiful example of Conway's law. That was definitely the communication structures shaping the systems. Where have you seen reverse Conway's law working?
So I see it at work quite often. And that's why I like talking about it, because I think that you have this, you can use it very gainfully. And I think that when you see people talking about the Spotify model or the Amazon two pizza team model, then that's actually, you're shaping the teams, and you're actually, and this ties into the current popular trend of talking about team topologies, where you create the team APIs, in a sense. You focus on the teams, and if you do that, and then you sort of portion out things, the way they communicate will be how the software sort of also is dragged into existence, in a sense, especially if you're building something new. If you have something old, then you'll need to go against all of that inertia. And per your example, unless you change something, nothing will change. But you do have these wonderful dynamics that you can, so a lot of people tend to conflate organizational structure in the sense that they think that the communication pathways and the organizational structure, sort of the hierarchy, the bureaucracy, that they are in any way similar. Of course, they're not. And this is also when people start talking about beating Conway's law, it's usually no, that's an application of it. It sort of, it just validates it because it is how people communicate. So how can you use the, if I shape communication, then I'll reshape the software? Can you exploit that tendency? And I've seen that done, and I've done it myself. When you have a large-ish team and you have some bit of it, they have a capability that you want them to expose as a service. But if their own consumer, what will happen usually, unless you have massive amounts of discipline over time, and most people don't, most teams don't, is that as long as you're one team, you'll start cheating. And if you're one person, you cheat all the time because that's the quickest way to do stuff. You just circumvent your own things. So just splitting that bigger team into two teams and creating what some persons would accurately call a dependency, we could call it collaboration, actually tends to reshape the software too. That's sort of, no, this is the boundary over which you speak. And then you actually get that software. And that will also in a way shape the cognitive load of both teams, actually. It gives them a smaller set of things to worry about. So you have this dynamic where, and that's fairly common. A lot of people don't do it deliberately. I think that they sort of, they're slightly Murphying their way to it. And I think that's where we get a lot of these really wonky domain models or wonky. So a lot of microservice architectures ends up being distributed monoliths. That's sort of what we're seeing. And that feels like a perfect instance of, well, this is Murphy's law acting on top of Conway's law, in a sense, or actually Murphy's law acting on top of the reverse Conway, that you have sort of, you've made these team splits, but they sort of, they happen by accident, or they happen by a factor that wasn't really deliberate, or it wasn't reflected upon.
So in a way, when we go from monolith to microservices or a distributed monolith, all we're really doing is changing the granularity of the picture, right? So when it's one big monolith, that's like one big pixel, or one big square. And then when we have lots of microservices, that just means we've got a prettier picture, a more clear picture of the same thing. That's what I hear when you say that.
Yeah, I think that's one way to think about it. There's a lot of people out there saying that unless you can do the design well and sort of figure out the boundaries and components within the process, what makes you delusional enough to think that you'd manage to do it when you distribute it? And I think that there's a lot of credence to that, because anything you can do between processes, any design that you can do between processes, you can, of course, do within process. So then you sort of, you end up in the debates of sort of, well, you can use different tools and technology and stuff like that. And yeah, that's an implementation details. But the boundaries, the way you can draw the boundaries are actually the same. And then it's sort of, can you use the social system and the technology to nudge you into making smarter decisions? And as you say, the thing that mainly happens if you just go, everything should go over the network instead, is that you create a distributed, slow monolith, unless you also think about, how am I partitioning this thing right? What the sort of zooming out does to an extent. And I think that this sort of, people don't realize that how much of a forcing function this is. But when you actually distribute it between processes, or you put a network between nodes, is that it changes the cost function of doing certain things. So the pain becomes way more obvious. It becomes more painful to do certain things, and that will actually shape how the different components both interact, what they can do, and how they end up doing it. You could actually claim that if you go microservice too early, or sort of if you split out teams too early, you set up a boundary where in order to sort of reuse something or in order to do something, I will need to go to someone else. And that's good, perhaps, but it's also something that might make me reluctant to reuse something that's somewhere else. So reuse is really, really tricky. Sort of that single spot of truth thing is not as clear-cut as many makes it out to be, but it is. It will force you to be either more insular or more outreaching, depending on your relationship to other teams.
And how much friction there is between that. So friction doesn't necessarily mean they don't get along. It's just the, as you say, the cost of the transaction.
Yeah, the cost of the transaction, the availability. There's a lot of teams that really like each other. Sort of people are good friends. They'd like to be good suppliers to each other. This happens all the time. They're all good intended, but they have different priorities, or they're all overwhelmed with requests from other teams. And that ends up them sort of being good friends, but horrendously bad service providers, which means that the service won't be used, or sort of it will be avoided, because it's not because I don't like you, but it's just because you can't deliver the service that I need for practical reasons. And then you'll find workarounds. So a lot of the workarounds, and this is a nice Murphy. I think that a lot of the hacks you see in organizations, like people don't use the officially supported APIs or data platforms, but instead they opt to integrate straight to a database or reinvent something that's officially already done in the organizations. So that sounds like Murphy. So if it's going wrong in all the in the most hurtful ways, and it's creating this legacy code, this big ball of mud, all of these bad things. But what it's pointing to, in my mind, if we see it like that, it's an accident. It's bound to happen if it can happen, but it's also finding a way. If you can't get the thing you need from the place you're supposed to get it, what people will do is they'll get it somewhere else, because their problem isn't going away.
So what I'm starting to see is we acknowledge there is such a thing as Conway's law and there is such a thing as Murphy's law. And I think to overcome both of them, we need both of the reversal ones. So if we're going to deliberately use something like reverse Conway's law, so put deliberate design into the way that communications happen across the groups, then we have to use an approach like reverse Murphy's law to say, what could possibly go wrong? And then what are some of the things we need to put in place, some of our plan Bs, to help detect those things going wrong in the communication structures? And then that may help us to detect those friction points and address them before they become embedded in our code.
Yeah, I think that sounds very, very reasonable. So how does this play out at, since you're usually working one or a few levels sort of above my granularity, since I'm very down in technology and you're very high up in the sort of the management of these things, do you have any good examples from that vantage point?
I think it's too easy to be idealistic at the higher levels. So it's very easy to say, let's just reorganize and not actually understand what that means. And also recognize that that may not change the communication flows. So you can reorganize where the people are. As you said before, hierarchy does not necessarily reflect how communication flows. And I think it's an unrecognized thing by most people at the management level. It's very easy to say, let's just buy this thing off the shelf and we're not going to make any changes to it. We're going to take it as it is. And if that means we have to change our business processes, we'll do that. But then at the end of the day, quite often that does not work out that way.
So this is one of these questions that really intrigue me, because I think that it plays into both sort of Murphy and Conway, that when we buy off-the-shelf solutions, if we buy a mature such thing in an area that isn't part of our core competency, or sort of it doesn't actually infer any competitive advantage to us, it seems like it would make sense to actually just become conformist towards the software in a sense. This is one of the things we hate when people drag in a team level tool, because it sort of it enforces a process at the team level. So it's horrible at that point. But I'm actually thinking that for some business processes, wouldn't it make a whole lot of sense to sort of, instead of having all your sort of calcified legacy ad hoc processes, just sort of for some of these things, you sort of just work with the tool and then sort of align yourself around it. Use that as a scaffolding to be able to do the other things. Wouldn't that make sense?
That is always the intent.
I'm conflicted because it feels like it would make sense at that level, but it doesn't make sense to me at the lower level.
Exactly. And I like what you've talked about with calcified business processes. That's, I think, exactly what happens. You know, the senior manager goes, let's get this nice vanilla off-the-shelf thing. Let's install it. Let's change everything around it. But because those business processes have been calcified in place for so long and the communications across the organizations have adapted to that or even contributed to the calcification of it, so I think it's a two-way thing. Because it's not just the IT systems we're talking about. It would be the business processes as well that are impacted by Conway's law. Then that means that you're stuck. You're stuck with now you've got this nice off-the-shelf vanilla thing that no one wants to use. Or in order for people to agree to use it, you've got to actually customize it. So that's what happens. Yeah, so what could possibly go wrong?
That. So one thing that just popped into my head, and this is partly me sort of as a not accomplished but hobby athlete, at least one of the interesting things when you try to change something about your technique in your particular sport, so running in my case, is that once you start doing that, you'll get all of these aches and pains somewhere else because you're very, very well adapted to what might be an inefficient or even injury-prone way of moving. But when you change it, occasionally what you get sort of need is someone to, if you've had an injury or something like that, is you go to a physical therapist or you get a sports massage or something in order to break up the scar tissue and sort of you have all of these trigger points. So in order to restore flexibility and get back to a more natural way of moving, you actually might have to endure quite a bit of pain. And unless you do that, you'll actually just fall back into the old thing. So the way forward is sort of install the new thing that is actually more neutral, more vanilla. And that's often fairly easy to sort of go, oh, that this is better. But sort of to actually make it stick, you need to go through that very, very, very painful process of breaking up all your old sins. And most people just completely forget how painful that can be and sort of, or they discount it, or they're not even aware that it's going to happen or need to happen.
It is an idealistic thing to say, let's just put something new in and change around it. I think that's a really good analogy.
When you mentioned Murphy's Law, I thought about one more thing, actually. And it makes more sense in Swedish than it does in English. But I think that too often when we talk about group dynamics, it ends up being group dynamite.
Yep.
Because group dynamics sounds like sort of such a nice and fluffy and settled subject. But often what happens is that it goes wrong in all the unexpected ways. So that's also a bit of Murphy. Any sort of conflict that could arise in a group probably will, and we need to be prepared to handle that. And maybe your reverse Murphy could be helpful in that too. Sort of, what are the conflicts that could pop up?